Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving, where we give you information and education about senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I am the host of the Caregiver's Toolbox, and I'm also the owner of Minute Women Home Care. What we do is a private home care in Lexington, Massachusetts. And today I wanted to talk about a fascinating article I read in Time magazine that came out in the last week. It has everything to do with COVID, and it is by Abigail Abrams from Time. And it is titled, Nursing Homes Are Seeking Immunity Amid COVID-19. And I, for obvious reasons, I wanted to talk about this because it's relevant to this podcast as well as what we're seeing in the world today. But it also is relevant to some of the recent podcasts that we've put out that talk about nursing homes and what's going to happen with their future. And at the end of the day, why they are having such difficulty when it comes to their public relations with the public as a whole. You know, in general, people don't want to go to nursing homes unless they absolutely have to. And this was something that I thought was a great article. It is a long article. It is suggested that it's going to take about 20 minutes to read. I'm not going to obviously read the whole thing, but I wanted to talk about some specific parts about it. And it starts out with actually a story from a woman named Penny Shaw, who is a resident at a nursing home in Braintree, Massachusetts. So being in Massachusetts, it certainly perked it perked up my ears a little bit, and I started reading. Just recently, Penny Shaw, 76-year-old in Braintree, Massachusetts, picked up the phone and reported her nursing home to the local police. The staff on duty had just told her that they can't provide her any of their usual care because they had no PPE. Since the coronavirus pandemic hit, the staff is supposed to wear PPE for helping all patients, but only the home's administrator, the executive director or the administrator, who doesn't work late on weekends, could give it out. So the CNA wouldn't be able to get masks, gloves, or gowns until the morning. Shaw was so angry at the facility that the staff couldn't provide her the care that she deserved, that she called the cops. And that's how the story kind of starts out. So you can obviously tell that this is not going to be pro-nursing homes. When you start out a story with something, when you start out an article with a story that is so obvious, assuming it's true, so obviously negligence and poor policy, it's not going to be a positive story for nursing homes. And so, you know, what this basically talks about and goes on to say that, you know, long-term care facilities, specifically nursing homes, make up at least one-third of coronavirus fatalities in most states. In Massachusetts, it's close to 60%. And, you know, what is going on is that nursing homes are lobbying not only state officials, but federal officials to get immunity from lawsuits over the way that facilities are treating patients during pandemics. And it is extraordinarily concerning to consumer advocates as well as families that they're able to get this immunity. And the nursing home has an understandable argument. And that argument is simply, we don't have the staff anymore because of the pandemic to staff as we normally could. The pandemic and the virus has ravaged through the nursing homes and has killed a lot of people because of it. And these are, you know, extreme circumstances that have caused us to have far more deaths than we normally would. And it's exasperated by the fact that we don't have the staff we normally would to be able to cover all of the clients and patients that we have in our facility. Which I think on its face value is a reasonable argument to be made. But the problem with this argument is that there's a number of them, and the issue is this immunity going to cover things that maybe it shouldn't be covering? You know, it's very easy, and it's a lot of gray area to be, you know, we all kind of know how lobbying works and negotiations as a whole work, is you ask for more than you really want, and then when you meet in the middle, or you meet at some point in time, you've gotten what you really wanted, and maybe you've gotten a little bit more than you were expecting to get. And so are these folks lobbying very, very well and getting immunity for things that maybe they shouldn't be immune for lawsuits for? And additionally, you know, with a lot of these bills, they're flying through either federal Congress, or for most of them, state Congress. You know, the senators and the House of Representatives, that, you know, this is getting done rapidly, and what's involved in these bills. And so there are 18 states that have granted nursing homes and other long-term care facilities some legal immunity related to the pandemic, either through laws or governor's orders. The industries have made moves in the last in at least 10 other states to secure similar protections. Consumer advocates, industry watchdogs, and personal injury attorneys say that providing legal immunity to thousands of private companies is dangerous. And they're absolutely right, it is dangerous. Now, consumer advocates and industry watchdogs, you know, they're a little bit more reasonable. Personal injury attorneys, that's where, you know, that's where it gets a little dicey, because they rely on being able to sue companies to be able to get their income. So it's a little hard to consider the personal injury association or those advocates as being completely unbiased. So the other issue that this article talks about quite a bit is that basically in normal times, the federal government, you know, establishes regulations for nursing homes, and the states take the lead on the oversight. You know, it goes on to say, if problems at facilities arise, residents can make complaints to the state's ombudsman, who investigate and advocate on their behalf. In many facilities, family members also provide an extra set of eyes and assist with tasks such as feeding and personal grooming. Now, this is where it gets really dicey, because this immunity is. Again, it sounds somewhat reasonable in theory, but the problem is now is that usually you had this dichotomy where you had, like it says, an oversight of family members who are generally coming in at least weekly on a regular basis, making sure that their loved one was being cared for properly. They were the advocate for their parent. And for the last 6 weeks, in many parts of the country, including up in New England and in Massachusetts, you have not been able to visit your family members if they are in an assisted living or a nursing home whatsoever. They've just started thinking about or allowing people to meet their loved ones outside of the assisted living, but that's assuming somebody can get outside of an assisted living, and most people in a nursing home can't get outside. And so for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you have a bunch of nursing homes that have had a staffing crisis, that have had these fundamental issues that generally everybody across the board is having issues with, and there's nobody that's able to go in there and see how good or how bad it is. And family members are obviously going to make sure that their loved ones are cared for as best as they can, because they're really the only advocates these seniors have. And so you have to imagine that the state's ombudsman is unable to maybe go into these buildings right now. And generally, the oversight that you have in Massachusetts, we're considered a pretty progressive state for the amount of money that's spent on healthcare and especially on senior care. And what I mean by that is that, you know, almost every single town has its own council on aging, which is not normal in most states. Maybe you have a county that has a council on aging. And additionally, we have our own Mass Health within Massachusetts. So we have our own Medicare system that cares for, you know, obviously the poor, and obviously the poor that are at any age, but people that that are unable to care for themselves, but also you then have Medicare and Medicaid. So you have a number of statewide things that maybe other states don't have. And so my point being with this is that I think, you know, overall we're doing more than most other states are doing for our senior population. But I can tell you that the oversight committee, or whatever you want to call them, those the department that oversees assisted livings in Massachusetts has, like, from what last I heard, like two or three people in it. So if you think about the thousands of assisted livings that are in the state of Massachusetts, and you have two or three people, a handful of people that are supposed to be the ones going out and making sure those assisted livings are abiding by the rules that they have to be to be an assisted living and making sure they're following up with those regulations, there's absolutely no way that they can see enough assisted livings to even do a yearly check. I mean, it's not possible with the amount of travel and the amount of the workforce that they have. So the reason I bring that up is, you know, these states ombudsmen, how many are there? I don't know how many that you have in your state, but, you know, states are all budget conscious. And that was when the economy was blowing and going 6 months ago, you know, and I'm willing to bet that most states don't have an adequate ombudsman. I could be wrong, but check into that with your state. My guess is there's probably not as many as there should be. And so now when you have a budget crisis, which you're now going to have for the foreseeable future, what happens then? You know, you have to get rid of people, and maybe that's a position that gets eliminated, or maybe it gets, you know, taken down from 5 to 3. Or 5 to 2, or whatever it might be. So now you really have nobody that's able to go into a nursing home to provide much oversight. You have to imagine that most nursing homes want to do the right thing, but, and the big but is, can they do the right thing? And what I mean by that is that if you have 40 or 50% of your staff that's no longer coming into work, how are you able to provide adequate care for all of the people that are in that nursing home? And then, the people that are providing care, do they get burned out? Do they start cutting corners? Do they start just wearing down where they're not providing that type of care? Or maybe they're making mental mistakes, like in the example. I mean, I'm trying to give whoever the executive director is the benefit of the doubt. I don't know how you make that mistake of being the only one to have PPE. And I understand why that is, because it's expensive. And the problem with handing out large quantities of PPP is it gets stolen. It walks off the job. I absolutely have experienced that firsthand, where we have brought in gloves to a client's home, a box of 100 gloves, and we get a call a day and a half later that all the gloves are gone. Well, it's because the caregivers leaving stuffed their pockets full of an extra 20 gloves or 30 gloves, and after 2 or 3 or 4 shifts of people doing that, the gloves are gone. So, you know, And when PPE is not easy to come by, you have to be extraordinarily selective on how you how you give that out, how you you need to make those supplies last as long as humanly possible. So I understand why that nursing home was doing that, but you still need to be around to be able to give the third shift that comes in at a club and 1 o'clock at night or whatever time they come in to give them the proper PPE so they can care for people. And that's just, you know, that to me is negligence. That's not just an act of God and whoops, you know, the coronavirus caused us. You need to plan for that. And so, you know, that is kind of where we're going to see some major issues, but maybe we're not going to see major issues because, you know, further on in this article, it is very clear that a lot of these states have given those immunity laws, have passed those immunity laws, or have made executive orders for those immunity laws. So, you know, One perfect example is New York. New York has the greatest outbreak in the country, and Andrew Cuomo signed last month a law that goes into effect that basically makes it not only immunity for both civil and criminal liability from actions for nursing home patients. Quite frankly, I'm not too surprised that Andrew Cuomo passed that law, because, you know, I think we're going to look back on hindsight being 2020, but we're going to look back on this, that his policy of forcing nursing homes to accept hospital patients that are that are COVID positive, and we know that are COVID positive, is going to be looked at as a major, major mistake that he made during this pandemic. I'm sure he didn't purposely want to cause deaths, but that policy definitely caused more people to die, whether it's one or it's 100 or it's 1,000. People died because of that policy. There's no doubt about it, that forcing nursing homes that were ill-equipped to handle COVID-positive patients and infection control to accept those patients was a mistake on his part, in my opinion. Now, this article does go further on about infection control, but we'll get there. But here's what I wanted to list out. Other than New York, other states have added immunity laws and would protect nursing homes from civil lawsuits, include Alabama, Louisiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, Nevada, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Vermont, Wisconsin. Governors in Arizona, Connecticut, Illinois, Georgia, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey have also issued similar immunity orders that cover nursing homes. So altogether, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 states that have immunity laws. And some of those states are the biggest states in the country when it comes to COVID-19, right? Massachusetts, one of them, and New York is one of them, and Illinois is one of them. So there's three big hot spots right there, as well as Michigan. So there's four, and five is New Jersey. So basically all the hot spots that there is COVID-19 have immunity from being sued. I don't know if that's necessarily right. I would think that a lot of people are going to be upset about that when they find out that they can't hold people accountable for making mistakes and possibly gross negligence. And we'll get to that. But a lot of people are upset about this. The nursing homes are claiming that this is an act of God and this is a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. But, you know, the argument is that, you know, even if gross negligence occurs, and there are lawyers that feel that gross negligence has occurred on a case-by-case basis, you know, having that type of immunity is a lot harder to sue for it. And it makes it much more difficult that the judge is going to find it in your favor rather than the other favor. Now, the other issue that I wanted to talk about was nursing homes in general. And I talked a little bit about a few podcasts ago about why people don't want to be in a nursing home and why nursing homes are closing at rapid rates. And it's because they don't get a whole lot of money from reimbursement for their services, and they are being bought by a lot of corporations that are expecting there to be a certain profit margin made by these companies. This is a for-profit industry. And because of that issue, because you don't get to just increase your rates anytime you want to, if you're going to have a certain profit margin hit, and there's only so much, there's a cap and a ceiling to how much money can come in, then the only variable that is then allowed to be wiggled around and to be changed is your overhead cost. And the biggest overhead these nursing homes have and assisted livings have and private agencies is your work staff. It is easily the biggest overhead you're going to have. So I'll read this. This is a little long, but I want to read it. The nursing home industry was in trouble before COVID-19. Nearly 70% of the country's roughly 15,600 nursing homes are for profit, and 57% are run by chains. For years, nursing homes have struggled to attract new residents, faced high staffing turnover rates and shortages, and often operated on thin margins with little room to upgrade their facilities. I mean, we've all walked into these nursing homes that look like they're from 1990. Standard violations in facilities are common. As many as 3 million infections occur in skilled nursing facilities every single year, killing 380,000 residents, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Last year, infection control and prevention problems were the most frequently cited issue at nursing homes, and 63% of nursing homes were cited for at least one infection control violation in the last two inspection cycles, which go back to 2016, according to data analyzed by Kaiser Health News. I mean, so for all of you listening out there, hopefully you got that, but basically what you're talking about is that it is a massive issue within the nursing home of in America of infection control, and that 63% of nursing homes were cited for at least one infection control violation since 2016, in the last 4 years. Now, to be as fair as possible, what is that violations? You know, Medicare can come in and be very nitpicky with their violations. If you don't have your toilet paper roll facing the right way, that can be a violation. If you have yellow paper and not white toilet paper, that could be a violation. So, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt, because every violation is different. Were these major violations? Were these minor violations? And citing that 63% of nursing homes were cited for at least one infection control violation doesn't give you the greatest feeling in the world one way or another, because a minor violation can easily turn into a major violation. And again, this is for specifically infection control violations. And so what you're dealing with, and what this goes on to say, is that it's because of the staffing, and not the staff, it's because of staffing. You know, it goes on to say that private equity firms have swooped in on the industry and now control more than 10% of facilities nationwide, further slashing costs and taking steps to maximize profits. When private equity firms take over nursing homes, a recent study by researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, Chicago, and New York University found that they tend to cut back on nursing staff, and these cuts are directly associated with declines in care standards and patient health. Private equity-backed facilities regularly push back against these critiques, saying that, of course, you know, we care the most about our clients, client safety and care is number one, and yada, yada, yada. Even nursing homes without private equity ties, understaffing is common. Nursing home jobs are notorious hard to fill, yes. In large part due to tough working conditions, yes. Low pay, yes. And limited benefits, yes. There's no federal minimum staffing ratio that nursing homes are required to meet, and that is a major problem. Nursing homes should have enough nurses and aides to provide at least 4 hours and 6 minutes of care per patient, an advocate says, but 75% of homes did not meet the standard before the pandemic. You know, they're not meeting it after it. So, you know, this to me is a perfect example of the death spiral that nursing homes are in. And to make my point clear, is that we absolutely need nursing homes. We have to have them. It's why the nation as a whole is trying to, why our government, even Obama and Trump, we're all trying to figure out how to get these nursing homes to work, because you need post-acute care. Not everybody is ready to go home after going into a surgery or having an emergency issue at a hospital. I'm not paid enough and I'm not smart enough to know what the answer to all of this is, but this is part of the reason that you're having these issues with nursing homes, and you will continue to have issues with nursing homes. They are understaffed, and there is not enough money coming in reimbursement by the federal government to be able to adequately pay people to care for the most vulnerable population that we have outside of children. And until we're willing to change the way we do business in that sense, it's going to continue to happen. And all the private equity firms are going to do is they're going to look to slash costs, increase profit, and take every single dollar that they can out of those nursing homes until there is no meat left on that bone, and then they will allow them to go bankrupt, and they will close them in record number, and they will walk away with the money and the profits that they took out, and they will say, well, too bad the business isn't profitable anymore. Let's go find some other type of industry or business that we can invest in and make money off of that, and they will pivot to a new industry in a New York minute. It will happen. It has happened. It is happening. Now, are you want to get mad at the private equity firms for doing that? Sure, you can, but that's capitalism. They're not doing anything wrong, quote unquote, in terms of that's their job. Their job is to go in and find places to make money. Are they immoral? I think you can make an absolute case for that. Is it illegal? There's probably a case for that as well. But I guess it's only illegal until you get, it's not illegal until you get caught is the way that they're thinking about it. We know that entitlements are costing this country a huge amount of money. And right now as a whole, we're not willing to pay for those entitlements. And we keep adding to the deficit and and we keep adding and adding and more in our debt to be able to pay for these entitlements. Whether you think they're deserving or not, that's just kind of where we're at right now. And until we are willing to pay enough money to these nursing homes to be able to operate at a certain level that we consider acceptable, you're going to continue having these issues because these private equity firms came in there for a reason. Somebody was willing to sell to them for a reason because they said, hey, listen, there's no more money on this. I can't make any more profit or it's too much of a pain for me. It's causing me headaches or I am unwilling to do things, meaning cut staffing to make a profit. And then the private equities come in and say, hey, we'll do it and we'll make a profit and we'll figure it out. And so this is kind of the death spiral that's in nursing homes because while they're needed, the more that this happens, the worse that they get, the more that people don't want to go to them, the less money is going to be going into the nursing home. And then the cycle just continues. They don't have enough money because their facilities aren't, they don't look good. They're not kept well. They smell when you go in there. They don't look updated. They don't look like a place where you'd want your mom to be. And then you find out that there's staffing issues. I mean, it's one thing not to like the food. It's one thing to have a place be clean but be outdated. Hey, we can all live in an outdated home. It's not the end of the world. But most people, I think, feel I'd rather have the chicken be a little bit dry and the wallpaper be from 1995 or 2000, but give my mom a clean place to live and good care. And once you start getting rid of a clean place and good care, you're going to continue having this cycle where people refuse to go to nursing homes. It's as simple as any type of supply and demand where if your product isn't good and people stop using it because your product's not good, you have two choices. Either you can continue to serve a crappy product that nobody wants and your business will eventually go in the gutter, or you can figure out how to improve your product so it's something people want, and then the people will hopefully come back and use your product or use your services. And right now, there's no money to improve the services, or it looks like there's no money to improve the services, so that's what you get. That's what you get. You get crappy product, and you get these issues that you have. And it's certainly scary to read that article and see that 63% of nursing homes were having infection control issues. 380,000 people were dying already in nursing homes because of infection control issues. And what the worst thing we were worried about was the flu, and that was a 0.1% death rate, and now we're dealing with something that's 10 times deadlier. Well, no wonder these nursing homes are having issues. They were never very good at it to begin with. So, you know, you can read that Times article, but it's, I guess I wasn't as surprised with the immunity because in some respects I get it, because I think a lot of these governors go, if these nursing homes get sued and they lose, they're going to file bankruptcy and then they're all going to go away. And then what happens when we don't have nursing homes anymore? Right? What happens when there are no more nursing homes because they all got sued into bankruptcy because they probably didn't do a very good job. And so they're looking at the lesser of the two evils is to have nursing homes that aren't very good rather than not having nursing homes at all. That's the only rationale that I can think for having this type of immunity. I get the immunity, and I started out saying, hey, listen, I understand why they want immunity. That makes sense to me because, listen, if you start getting sued for not being able to stop a virus that nobody took seriously and nobody was prepared for, or nobody decided to be prepared for it, I can understand that rationale. But I can't understand the rationale when there's gross negligence and all of a sudden that immunity starts creeping into things that it shouldn't be providing immunity for. And then on top of that, that immunity is going to be a reason that nursing homes don't have to improve their game, to improve their service, to improve the service they're providing to this vulnerable population. And I think that's where it's frustrating, because I understand for this specific instance, you need this immunity. I get that. But does that mean that you're just not going to, does this mean you're just going to kick that can down the road? Because clearly there's already an issue there. And this COVID-19 exasperated that issue and made it that much worse. So you can take a look at the article. I was pretty blown away by it. It's a long article. I thought it was a good article. Obviously, it's very critical of nursing homes. And you know, you can make your opinion on whether it should be or not. I definitely see the side where nursing homes are in a bind, where you have to imagine at least 30 to 50% of their staff is gone. They did not show up for work. So how do you provide good care to people that when you don't have any staff? I understand that, and I hope that you would understand that, or at least be somewhat sympathetic to it. But it's hard to be sympathetic to that when it's your mom or it's your dad. And I get that as well. And then when you find out that infection control was an issue to begin with, and then COVID comes around and completely takes advantage of that apparently glaring issue that nursing homes already had, you just kind of shake your head and you throw your hands up in the air and say, well, clearly we as a country weren't really too worried about this. And the proof is in the pudding that, you know, we continue to defund Medicare and Medicaid because there's not enough money to pay for all these services because people don't want to have their taxes raised collectively as a whole. So, I mean, it goes directly into politics. I don't want to get into the politics, but that's the conundrum, right? Are we willing to pay the money that's necessary to be able to pay for the entitlements that seniors need or feel that they're entitled to? And right now, that's not happening, clearly. So take a look at it. Nursing homes are seeking immunity amid COVID-19 is the title of it. It's by Abigail Abrams. I thought it was outstanding. I thought it was a good article, informative, and it's definitely worth your while. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to the Caregiver's Toolbox, and I hope you stay safe. I wish you health and safety, as well as your family health and safety, and we will catch you on the next one.